Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Going to continue reading from Canto 3, Chapter 22, and we'll read verses 7 through 11. This is Swayambhuva Manu speaking to his future son-in-law, Kardava Muni. And this verse is, the first verse is a continuation of the appreciation of a Kshatriya for the association of a qualified Brahmana. And the emphasis, then the next verses are the purpose of his coming, his daughter. And in the section about his daughter, there's something there about Narada Muni. Because Narada Muni not only makes bhaktas for his bhakta program, but he seems to get involved in matchmaking too. Because Narada made a recommendation to Swayambhuva Manu, this would make a very qualified husband for your daughter. And with the approval of the father, Narada spoke to the daughter about the qualifications of Kardava Muni as a potential husband. And she really liked it, what she heard. And so she gave her heart to Kardava Muni, and that's already a done deal. Now he just has to say yes to the marriage proposal. Of course, the yes has already been instructed by Lord Vishnu. So, pretty comprehensive matchmaking arrangement here. Normally it doesn't happen so easily. It's a little more complicated. No horoscope, by the way. Give us your birth information, we'll cast a horoscope and see if it works. Anyway, so text 7 follows the same message as 5 and 6. The value of hearing from a sadhu. He says, I have fortunately been instructed by you, and thus great favor has been bestowed upon me. Anugraha is the word for favor. Great favor. Mahan anugraha. And I thank God that I have listened with open ears to your pure words. So the emphasis in the purport goes to hearing, and sometimes Prabhupada has used the adjective ardent hearing. Here it's open hearing. So there's a sound vibration being transmitted. It's by favor, anugraha, or mercy, by Krishna's mercy, that one gets such an opportunity. Because I just taught this again in Beijing for a week during their national holidays. Everybody in China, well, not everybody, there's national, people don't work for a whole week. Anybody that knows, you have any Chinese people in your workplace? Oh, you're not in the army. In your workplace, any Chinese people? Chinese people are known for being workaholics. Anybody in the West, IT people are often from India and from China, and then, you know, some Americans. And the Chinese people are there 20 hours a day. They love working hard. 7 days a week, maybe not 20 hours a week, 18 hours a week. They're really hardworking people. But the national holidays, everyone's vacation. So they take vacation. They go to resort places, and the resort places are packed. There's a zillion people everywhere. It's hard to move. Anyway, so during that national holiday, it's a very nice time to have gatherings of devotees come together, except that it's not legal to have gatherings of anybody except the public places. So, anyway, without all the details, I covered Madhurya Kadambini by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the one of the early chapters. The first chapter is this, addressing the question, how does bhakti begin? And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur uses a classic approach. First, he describes the independence of Krishna. He's the supreme independent. Everything comes from him. He's not dependent on anything. Everything is dependent upon him. And then there's his internal potency. And she is as independent as he is independent. It's his internal potency. So, Bhakti Devi is an expansion of Adini Shakti, the pleasure potency of the Supreme Lord. Radha expands as Bhakti Devi, just like in our Prema Dvani prayers. Bhakti Devi ki jai. She's an expansion of Radha. So we could say through Radharani or through Bhakti Devi, either way is correct, that we may be engaged in devotional service. So how does devotional service begin? The mercy of Krishna. So he does this logic thing. Well, if it was the mercy of Krishna, what's the cause of the mercy of Krishna? Well, it's Krishna's causeless mercy, no cause. Well, if that was the case, then everyone would be a devotee, because just like the sun shines everywhere, regardless of where the sun shines everywhere. So if it's the causeless mercy of Krishna, then everyone would be a devotee. But we don't see that. So that can't be the complete explanation. And it goes to different. Then it's mercy of the unalloyed devotees. But similar, the unalloyed devotees don't discriminate between qualified and unqualified. They see everyone as serving Krishna. So it comes down to a madhyama bhakta, because they're trained to discriminate. And Krishna, with the fullness of his supreme independence, he gives a license, a distributor's license. Power of attorney is called in the West. Do you have that term here? Power of attorney. He gives power of attorney to his Madhyama Bhakta and says, I give myself to you, you can give me to whoever you like. But then there's conditions on what the duties of a Madhyama Bhakta are. Worship Krishna, make friends with the devotees, be kind upon, show mercy to the less fortunate, and avoid the demons. So demons don't get, but the innocent get, if the Madhyama is doing his function properly. He gives mercy to the innocent. And so bhakti is the cause of bhakti, is the conclusion. Through the conduit of a Madhyama Bhakta. So that's what Swayambhuva Manu was saying here. By your mercy, or by great fortune, by great favor, the word that's used that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur focuses upon is yadrichchaya, which is an interesting word that is often translated as somehow or other. Yadrichchaya. Some inexplicable reason. We can't really say how. It's just somehow or other. The mercy of a devotee works that way. Something prompts them from within to go and, you know, and it's the prompt from within is confirmed by a prompt from without that says, this is the will of for us. This is the desire of Lord Chaitanya to give the holy name. So give the holy name to this person. It takes the willingness of the Madhyama to give. Shortly before I came to India, I was at a home program in New Jersey, and at the end of the home program, some man who I'd never met before was very enthusiastic to say a few words. So I sat. He came and paid obeisances, and he gave his name, and I couldn't understand his name, and he said it again. I couldn't understand it. It's a Muslim name. He said, I was born in a Muslim family. And, you know, I was practicing Islam for years. And some months ago, at the gym, you know, doing workouts, the person next to me was chanting. And I asked them what they were doing in some conversation. They explained it. So more conversation. They taught some other things. They gave me a book. Next time I saw them, they gave me another book. And now I'm chanting 16 rounds. Because the yadrichchaya factor, the person that was carrying bhakti, had the mindfulness, the presence, to give some bhakti to that person who they saw in the gym. So I'm not recommending that you go on book distribution or do sankirtan in gyms. Probably you don't go to gyms anyways. But wherever you do go, if we are mindful of, without the mercy of a Madhyama Bhakta, persons will remain a Bhakta. Maybe, just like this other purport that we extensively read, particularly referring to Jad Bharat, where even if one does so many rituals and does so many activities and piety and charity and activities of goodness and religiosity, without the association of bhakta, one will not become, will not receive bhakti. And all of it will lead to further birth and death in this material world. Entanglement in pious fruit of activity. So, I'm very fortunate. You've instructed me. And the emphasis in the purport is hearing. Hearing very carefully. And that which is heard is in the purport, it's very similar to what you're familiar with, Canto 1, Chapter 9, where Bhishma Dev says that the teacher teaches two things. One, character. Two, specific application of service. Character is for everybody. And the teacher understands the nature of the student. They're gifted by Krishna to do that. Just like the person that's gifted in music can hear things that the person that's not gifted in music doesn't hear. Or the person that's gifted in art and they develop artistic ability, then they can see things that, or architecture, or Prabhupada gives the example of a motor mechanic. Somebody's by the side of the road and they can't get their car started. He speaks like this. The mechanic comes, he just touches something and zoom, zoom, and it starts. Because they know. They're qualified. So a qualified teacher is one also who knows the nature of the student, and according to the nature of the student, just as Bhishma Dev says, they both varna and ashram, they're suitably instructed. Purpose of both varna and ashram and the character part is to bring one to Krishna. And without understanding the purpose behind the followings of rules and regulations or whatever the instructions are that one has received, then the fullness of the benefit will not come. Even one may do those things obediently or religiously or dutifully. The fruit will not come. Because the fruit is a relationship with Krishna, loving relationship with Krishna through the medium of devotion to Krishna. So the duties of varna and ashram and whatever else that instructions one receives is for that purpose. So both shiksha and diksha, both the particular activity, the application of teachings in one's life and in practical ways, that's through the hearing process. Prabhupada speaks like this specifically. Or the mantra that's received, it's through the ear, it's through sound. Verses similar to this are verses which Gaur Govinda Maharaj, I remember his repeating this very strongly, that one must, countering the notion that some people have out there towards the Bangalore direction, that Prabhupada is their spiritual master, that one has to hear and receive the mantras through the ear. One has to receive instruction through the ear of the practical activity. And shiksha certainly can come through and does come through Prabhupada's teachings. There's a relationship with him through his teachings. Just as a for example, I know two devotees, there's probably more that I don't know, disciples of Prabhupada that never win his physical presence. And through hearing his recorded messages and his written messages, as well as receiving initiation through the mail, chanting under beads and sitting in a fire sacrifice and so on, they're still practicing Krishna consciousness very strongly today. Very wonderful devotees. Wonderful devotees. So it's through hearing. And the hearing includes this, that what we're doing by reading Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada called it recorded kirtan. Kirtan is where you hear, then you record the kirtan, and I'm sure you do this all the time. You listen to recordings of kirtan and class, and that's also hearing. This is also recorded speaking. Literally, that's how it was done. Prabhupada would speak into the dictaphone, and then transcribers would receive those recordings, and they would transcribe what they heard, and then the editors would go back and hear and make sure that they got it right and present the text, and then it went to the people that did the formatting of everything, and it went to the printer, and we have, so it's recorded kirtan. The form is different, but through technology it's recorded kirtan, and that way hearing. And through hearing, then a relationship where there's instruction. So the primary shiksha guru for those who are following Prabhupada's teachings is our founder Acharya, through his teachings. there is a relationship through simply through his teachings. And he again, Prabhupada in the purport, makes, as in the previous verse, reference to the Vyavasayatmika verse, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, where such instruction becomes the life and soul of the receiver of that message, and receiving the message in that way brings perfection. It's the key to success in spiritual life, Prabhupada called it. The key to success in spiritual life is taking the instructions as one's life and soul. So, for generations, how will the continuation of the message of devotional service that so uniquely was presented by our founder Acharya continue over the generations? And because one day all of us are gone, and so something needs to carry forward, and that carry forward is the unique position through the wonderful rendering of others. May in the future, Prabhupada explained like this, may make commentaries. Other commentaries in Bhagavad Gita have been done, or elucidations on some parts of the message of Bhagavad Gita. And it's nice to do like that. Not just commentaries in Bhagavad Gita, but other spiritual writings. Prabhupada encouraged it. He was encouraged to do that by his spiritual master. He encouraged us to do that. So it's right. Here's what Prabhupada... There are different departments of activity in Krishna consciousness, and a spiritual master, knowing the particular ability of a particular man, trains him in such a way that by his tendency to act, he may become perfect. So he speaks of Arjuna as a military man and an artist doing artistry. If one is a literary man, he can write articles and poetry for the service of the Lord under the direction of the spiritual master. So using literary abilities, just as Vyasadeva was doing under the direction of Narada, and Prabhupada was doing under the direction of Bhaktisiddhanta, and so on and so on. When one is authorized to do so, writing such literature is a nice service. Ability connected to instruction. And so the instruction is operative. Is one acting under instruction. And then great spiritual power is there. I was describing this yesterday about Icha Shakti. The Lord's desire was for creation to take place, and he did so just by glancing, and his glance was carrying the Lord's Icha Shakti, his desire potency. And so the act of glancing was sufficient. It happened because of the Icha Shakti. And the living entities and the Mahatattva and so on. So this is the operative principle or the key to success in spiritual life. Instructions, acting according to the instructions of the spiritual master. And you've all been trained very nicely in this principle, so you're well aware. The factual execution of the instruction which he receives from the spiritual master is the only duty of a disciple, and that will bring him perfection. One should be very careful to receive the message from the spiritual master through the ears. How else are you going to receive? Through your feet? Through your mind? Through the ears. When an instruction is received through the ears and carried out with faith, then that's very nice. That will make one's life successful. So now comes the purpose of his visit, the practical purpose of his visit, aside from the spiritual benefit purpose. He says, O great sage, gracious, be pleased to listen to the prayer of my humble self, for my mind is troubled by affection for my daughter. It's not exactly because I have affection for my daughter my mind is troubled, but there's a circumstance in her life that as the father, it's now my duty. Prabhupada writes, interesting, normally one doesn't approach God or teacher, guru, with a request for something. But even if there is a need to ask a favor from the spiritual master, one cannot ask that favor without satisfying him fully. In other words, service. Practical service. So, Swayambhuva Manu is warming up to, I have a concern about my daughter. He's looking up to the Brahmana. Please accept my daughter. I'm troubled to be sure that she has a proper arrangement. And then he goes into identifying what are the conditions whereby a proper arrangement is to be identified. And he, the first message is there's three things: age, quality, and character. Age, quality, and character. My daughter is the sister of Priyavrata and Uttanapada. She is seeking a suitable husband in terms of age, character, and good qualities. So Devahuti is now of mature age. And as the father, he's examined her quality, certainly knows her age, and character. So the commentary, Prabhupada is saying, a low-class, this is how Prabhupada said it in another place. A low-class person, woman, bears a low-class man, and they'll be happy together. A thief marries a thief, and they'll be happy together. And a person of high character needs to marry a person of high character. It doesn't speak about who their parents are, it's just their character. And again, she didn't go shopping for a husband. Okay, go see you later, Devahuti. Go find out who it is that you'd like to marry and just let us know and we'll make all the arrangements. It was the parents were taking that responsibility on their daughter's behalf. Although it wasn't a non-communication thing, she specified who she wished to marry, and first it was a suitable husband with similar character and similar quality and similar age. The moment she heard, this is text 10, the moment she heard from the sage Narada of your noble character, learning, well, he has some other qualities, beautiful appearance, youth and other virtues, she fixed her mind upon you. Short purport, Devahuti had never met him. Again, through hearing, she heard about him through a reliable source, through Narada. Doesn't give the history of how Narada would into exchanges with Kardama and how he knew of Kardama's qualities, but he knew. And specifically, and that, as I was reading this, I was wondering, why is he approaching Kardama? How does he know what Kardama has a desire to marry? But he also knew that. So before the approach was made to Kardama, normally one would go to Kardama's father, the boy's father, not to the boy. But his father is Lord Brahma. But Narada, also being a son of Lord Brahma, knew Kardama's wish to have a qualified wife. So then that's an obstacle that was already crossed. She heard from Narada Muni that Karada Muni was just fit to be her husband. Therefore, she became fixed in her heart that she would marry him, and she expressed her desire to her father, who, therefore, brought her before him. Now, this makes it sound like she was in the forest too. Whereas what Lord Vishnu said was the Swayambhuva Manu and Shatrurupa would come. But in any case, whether she was there or not there, he, as she heard of him, he was hearing of her. Therefore, text 11, please accept her, O chief of the Brahmanas, for I offer her with faith. And she is in every respect fit to be your wife and take charge of your household duties. So in the purport, Prabhupada is discussing two things, that grihastha and grihamedi, these two terms you're familiar with. Grihastha is for spiritual progress and grihamedi is for animal life. Unregulated, not spiritually purposeful intermingling of man and woman. And she was of a divine or spiritual character, wishing to be married to one of a similar character. And so, to fulfill the duties of the grihastha ashram, she was suitable. And it is the duty of the wife to take charge of household affairs and not to compete with the husband. A wife is meant to help, but she cannot help her husband unless he is completely equal to her in age, character, and quality. So above he's saying, so it's in addition to these ones previously mentioned, age, quality, and character, is now service in the house, household duties. She must be helpful to him in his household duties. So it's not just, anyway, it's not that, okay, I'm the king and you're the housemaid. That's not the indication. It's he has household duties. He's going to one a man who accepts responsibility like that. There are duties, and the role is the wife assists the husband in duties. And how that gets defined in households is different according to different households. But it's a relationship of service, common service. Not only she serves him, he serves her, and they have duties, and they understand how they share those duties, the wife assisting the husband in those duties. And that's embedded directly within the verse, that she's fit, she's qualified to assist you in your household duties. So kindly accept. Step back from this, and like some other passages in the Srimad Bhagavatam, one might ask the question, one might wonder, I thought this Srimad Bhagavatam was only about Krishna. You know, like Krishna. And this is about, she wants a husband and he wants a wife and people getting the potential wife and husband together. And where's Krishna in the picture? What's the place for this? Why is this in the Bhagavatam? Besides it's history, it's a Purana, it's Bhagavat Purana, where Krishna is at the center. That is to say, household duties, if done properly, the interest is that it leads to Krishna. And where the household duties are not done properly, it takes one away from Krishna. So one needs to know how to do those duties properly, what qualities one needs to carry into such a situation of service, and keep Krishna in the center with proper guidance, with proper standards, and so forth. How to take up even worldly affairs in a Krishna conscious way. Just a nice reference for this. There's many, but because I've been very much involved in Sri Brahma Samhita, the final five verses of Sri Brahma Samhita address this very clearly, where after creation, after the sub-creation, after the transcendental realization of Brahma and these wonderful Brahma prayers, Govindam prayers in Brahma Samhita, at the end, so he's an enlightened soul who understands the fullness of spiritual reality and his own spiritual identity as a maidservant of Krishna in his spiritual form, still has a desire for worldly activity, specifically creation. So he has a doubt. How am I going to maintain my Krishna consciousness and take up this worldly activity of creating universe? So that's a question people ask, an important question to ask. If people don't ask it anyway, it's a very important question to ask. Sometimes it's the question is, how do I balance spiritual and material? As if like there's something on this side and something on that side, and you have to balance them. But the answer is not given, not in terms of how do you balance them, but how do you do each thing for Krishna, even the worldly things for Krishna. And following Bhakti Siddhanta's translation in English very closely follows, not exactly a translation, but very closely follows Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary in Bengali. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary in Bengali very closely follows Jiva Goswami's commentary in Sanskrit. And I've read the translation in Sanskrit. I haven't read the translation of his Bengali, but it's close, the term. So in that section, Bhaktisiddhanta describes in elaborate terms three categories of activities for any embodied being. Social ones. These aren't the categories that he uses. Survival ones, like eating and bathing and performance of duty. And the cultivation of finer aspects like reading and music and literature and so forth. So there are different aspects of life that literally they're in the dealing with the body and the mind and other bodies and other minds. And how these can become as liberating as the activities of hearing and chanting is when those activities are joined by the hearing and chanting or the direct bhakti activities and submitting them in a subservient way to the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, then they can act, including marriage, they can act in as liberating a manner as the direct activities of bhakti. It's a very important concept, a very important way in which to live. So we certainly need guidance and direction in both areas, the direct activities of bhakti, how to do them nicely, properly, and how to do our worldly activities properly. So again, it goes back to the hearing process. So therefore, there's hearing of these topics in Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadeva Goswami is narrating this. What interest does he have? He's a liberated soul. What interest does he have in, he married her? and she married him. And they did so because of this and that and the other reason. He's not interested in something worldly, but he's interested in this subject matter because it's in relation to Krishna. It brings one, it can bring one to, properly, to Krishna's shelter. Therefore, it's in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. So let's see if there's any comments or questions on this. Yes? You're raising your hand or just stretching? Okay. Yes. This morning I mentioned
Vyavasayatnika Bodhi,
yeah. But what, due to offenses, we may not attain the bhava stage, but what is the obstacle for attaining the Vyavasayatnika Bodhi? Well, go back to the purport of that verse and you'll find it. There are two words used in the verse where Lord Chaitanya is quoted from Chaitanya Charitamrita, where faith is defined. So it's weakness of faith is the cause. That's the obstacle. A word that's not the same as but similar to faith, shraddha, is vishvas. Shraddha shabde vishvas kahe sudridha nishchaya. So vishvas specifically means confidence. Now they're not totally different, faith and confidence, vishvas. It's trust, which is similar to faith, but it's like the example that Prabhupada gives is, as I walk across the floor, I trust, or I have confidence, or I have faith, I'm not going to fall through the next floor down. It's going to hold my weight. The engineer did his job properly, and you know, I can walk across the floor, and it'll be all right. So, to do anything, we have some faith. So, confidence is another word. It's similar. I don't need to. It's not an etymological differentiation between faith and confidence, but it's. A trust that there will be an outcome, a faith. Faith. It's my sense of the terminology is faith is something that's broad, and confidence addresses a particular outcome. By this, that will come. Kind of like a science, cause and effect. Faith is the confidence that if I achieve bhakti, then all other desirable things will come. So one must be, in that sense, one must be learned in the science of cause and effect. That's confidence. So I may be unqualified, but if I apply the science of bhakti, despite my disqualification, cause and effect will take place. I have confidence in that. Faith is confidence in that. So it's not exactly faith. It's not confidence in me. It's confidence in the process of bhakti can take even a weak entity like me to a better place. Confidence in that. So that's the obstacle. Go ahead. Well, I've heard you ask a similar question, so I want to be really clear. I'm understanding what your question is. Conversely, one can say, if I'm still involved in sinful activity and thus I'm receiving reactions to sins, then I'm not eligible for vyavasayatmika buddhi. So then, in that sense, yes. So I have to jananam punya karmanam. I've stopped my sinful activity and I'm only engaged in proper activity. Now, that can be intermittent, you know, unsteady bhakti. Sometimes not, and that's not vyavasayatmika buddhi. It's anishtita bhakti. So, vyavasayatmika, so yes, the answer to your question is yes. One must come to the stage minimally for vyavasayatmika buddhi to be, you know, register as this is a fit person who can be described as having vyavasayatmika buddhi is minimally at the nishtha stage. Or even there may be some residual traces of other things, but they can't manifest because the bhakti is so strong. It overwhelms them. It uproots them. They can't manifest. And then one continues to move further and further. One can make further divisions in scripture, Bhagavatam, there's the Kanishtha, Madhyama, and Uttama. And followers of Bhaktisiddhanta have made divisions of those divisions. Kanishtha, Kanishtha, Madhyama, Kanishtha, Uttama, Kanishtha. Kanishtha, Madhyama, 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 Uttama, Madhyama. Like that. And further divisions. So one can be very advanced in the nishtha stage and say, you know, it's entering into the ruchi stage and entering into the sakti stage like that. Another way of saying the same thing, some acharyas have commented that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has commented that the nine stages of bhakti are simply different stages of faith. The first one is Shraddha and the last one is Prema, and it's just a statement of the quality of faith with different nomenclatures of look at it through the lens of the quality of faith and then you've understood that particular stage properly. But then faith is confidence that cause and effect. I mean, it's not mechanical cause and effect. There's the mercy of Krishna involved in proper application of the bhakti principle. That goes, it goes without saying, but just said it. Not just what I do and then Krishna is obliged kind of thing. Not a mechanical cause and effect, but an emotional. When Krishna sees the effort of his devotee, he helps his devotee. It's really the effort of the helping of Krishna from the sincere desire and steady application of the process of bhakti, Krishna reciprocates. Did I take care of it? Okay. Anything else? You're usually grouped with so many nice questions and your silence is deafening. So I'll speak something else then. This, the question of faith and the science of bhakti, going back to Vrindavan. The life of one of the places that we're going to visit is Brahmakund. And Brahmakund has recently been renovated by some people that renovate places in Vrindavan. It's done very, very gorgeously. And it's the place where the Brahmavimohan Leela took place. If you've ever wondered where, it's in Vrindavan town. The Cowherd boys are having lunch near the Jamuna, and the place where it says that Brahma took the calves and cowherd boys and put them in a cave. But most of Vrindavan is flat, so where were the caves? I don't see any caves, I don't see any hills in that area, but who knows what it was at that time. But at least where the Govindaji temple is, it's up on a hill. In fact, it is one of the rendezvous places of Radha and Krishna's pastimes. In the morning, Radha and Krishna would rendezvous at Vrindakund. Vrindakund is on the western side of Nandagram, and Nandagram is way over on the western side of Vraja. So that was the morning meeting place. And the midday meeting place was Radhakund. And the evening meeting place was Govinda Parvat, or the hill on which Govindaji Temple is based. And because of that, when you look at the Govindaji Temple, you don't see because they're in the back, but in the backside is, on the left, there's a deity of Yogamaya. To go there, you have to get to Pujari, happen to have a few extra rupees that you're willing to part with, and he'll take you down a set of stairs in the temple because to hide the deity from people that would like to break deities. And over on the right side was Vrindadevi. There's a temple of Vrindadevi. That Vrindadevi deity, when the wicked king wanted to come and destroy all the temples, Jai Singh from Jaipur took the deities on bullock carts and took them on the direction of Rajasthan. Except they stopped at Kamyavan, right at the corner of Vraja, and in the next morning to rest, the next morning the cart in which Vrindadevi was wouldn't move. And they tried this and that and the other thing, and the cart wouldn't move. They understood she didn't want to go, and so she stayed. But previously she was on top of this hill. And that's the very place where Vajranav installed the deity of Govindaji on Govinda Tila, where one of the meeting places of Radha, three principal, I think they call it Yogpith, three principal meeting places of Radha and Krishna. So that is up on a hill. So who knows what the topography was when Krishna was there. Somewhere there were caves, because the Brahmavimohan Leela took place where Brahma put the calves and the cowherd boys into a cave. But it's also a place where before Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, he requested Lokanath to go in advance to Vrindavan. He said, I'm going to be taking sannyas, and after I take sannyas, I want to go to Vrindavan. You go there first and find a place for us. We'll be there together. So Lokanath and Bhugarbha went together. And so in that Brahmakund area, there's Bhugarbha and Lokanath with their water pot and their japa beads, along with the six Goswamis and Lord Chaitanya. But also Bilvamangala Thakur. He stayed there according to his biography. I don't know how it worked out like this, but he stayed there for 700 years. That's a lot of years to live. In Kali Yuga, he lived some years before Lord Chaitanya, because Krishna Karnamrita by Bilvamangala Thakur was a book that Lord Chaitanya regularly would read or hear recitations from, and he loved it very much. Bilvamangala Thakur wasn't a Gaudiya Vaishnava. He was before Lord Chaitanya. He was ended up in the Vishnu Swami Sampradaya, but before that he was a bit of a Mayavadi, but a Brahmana. And you know the whole story of his, although he was a Brahmana, he had something going on the side. He was qualified, but yet stuck. On one hand, qualified, but stuck with attraction for sex life, and specifically sex life with a prostitute. So he heard from the prostitute that long description. It's a detailed description of how he, on the evening of his father's funeral, he was telling the priest, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, because he wanted to go see the prostitute. And it was a stormy night, terrible, terrible storm. So much so, although he went to visit her every day, every night, rather, she figured it's a terrible storm, he won't come, it's his father's funeral. So she locked everything, the gate and everything. And you know the story. Tried to cross the river. The river was turbulent. He tried to cross it anyway. And the river carried him swiftly, and so he grabbed onto what he thought was a log, but it was a dead corpse floating on the river, and used that dead corpse to cross the river, and then, and on and on and on, the whole thing. And she saw him in his condition, saying, you know, if only you had such attachment for the Supreme Lord as you have for this body. And he understood this is his spiritual master speaking through her. And so the next day he went to Vrindavan, and en route to Vrindavan he became attracted not to a prostitute but to a Brahmin's wife, and he was following the Brahmin's wife, and she lost track of Vrindavan and became fixed on her, and he followed her right to her home, and she went to her husband and said, I don't know what this man's intention is, but protect me, help. So the husband came to the door and saw Bilvamangala Thakur and said, you look like a very refined gentleman, a brahmana. That you come to our door, is there some service we can do? And he bluntly said, I'm attracted to your wife. I want to enjoy privately with your wife. Brahminical truthfulness, right? And so he said to his wife, well, he seems like a very cultured person, and so you should satisfy him. I don't know why he said like that, but he said like that. And so while waiting for this conversation, he regained his stability and requested the woman, I want to see, can you pull the pin from your hair so your hair will fall. She pulled the pin, he took the pin and poked his eyes out. Because it's these instruments, these eyes that are attracting me to the form of a woman. And then he was making his way to Vrindavan, and one small boy, who was Krishna, took his hand to take him and lead him to Vrindavan. And he didn't realize at first that it was Krishna. But when he heard Krishna playing upon his flute, then he realized it was Krishna. So he tried reaching for Krishna. And Krishna ran away, and he said, well, you can leave my grasp, but you can't leave my heart. I've captured you in my heart. Later, Krishna returned, and so having impure, other things happened. Krishna took him all the rest of the way to Brahmakund. Krishna came and a village boy saying, I've come to bring you some milk. If you would like some milk, I can bring you some milk every day. Krishna came and brought him milk every day because Bilvamangala Thakur was very expert in playing on a musical instrument of Veena and singing his Krishna Karnamrita. And although the song was about Krishna, it was the devotion, not just he was a good Veena player. His devotion was so strong that Krishna couldn't resist, and Krishna came. So he would sit all day long, Krishna just sitting listening, and Bilvamangala Thakur singing for 700 years. So reposing of faith where one has some weakness. And one certainly, I mean, it's not the recommendation that you poke your eyes out, and that's the solution for Krishna consciousness. But attraction for Krishna can be mixed with other kinds of attraction. And to come to the Vyavasayatmika Buddhi stage, which was your question and the theme of this little section. Hearing process is most important, and acting in a mood of service to Krishna according to one's nature and ability, doing for Krishna what is pleasing to Krishna, doing that in a manner that is pleasing for Krishna. Before he went to Vrindavan, some of the biographies of his life say he sought the permission of Somagiri, who gave his consent, and he went to Vrindavan under the blessings of his spiritual master to do so. Anyway, little Vrindavan Katha.